the challenge was I was seeking guidance on how to build a business from people who weren't qualified to give it.
What's up, everyone? This is Satoru Mateo, and welcome to a new episode of Half-Assed to Badass. In today's episode, we have a special treat for you. I'm interviewing Jeff Woods, the vice president of The One Thing and host of The One Thing podcast. If you haven't read the book yet, The One Thing, it's a great book, and I highly recommend. As you listen to this interview, you'll know exactly why. Let's get into the interview. But first, here's the introduction. How do entrepreneurs, business owners, and experts influence themselves, their clients, and teams to maximize profitability, efficiency, and create lasting impact? How do they simplify life and business and yet still achieve more? What's the one thing separating the mediocre from the best? This podcast will give you the answers and reveal the secret strengths and the not-so-easy-to-admit flaws of the elite. My name is Satoru Mateo, and welcome to the Half-Assed to Badass podcast. Okay, so welcome, Jeff. I'm so happy and excited to have you here on the show. So before we start, the one question that I really like to ask, because I think it's interesting to see, because we all have different perspectives.
Yeah.
What is the difference between a half-ass and a badass in your perspective?
I think it would come down to either purposefulness or intention. You know, kind of the same thing. When I think of half-ass, I think of somebody or actions that are not purposeful or deliberate. You know, you're just kind of doing it. You're just going through the motions. Versus when I think of a badass, I think of somebody who's intentional in what they do and why they're doing it.
I love that. That's beautiful. So let's get into it. I'd like to know what's your backstory?
Yeah. So today there's a book called The One Thing, which is one of the highest rated business books of all time. It was written by two guys, Gary Keller. He started Keller Williams. It's the largest real estate company in the world, and his co-author, Jay Papazian. When they wrote the book in 2013, I don't think they realized that it was going to take off the way that it did. But when it did, they looked up and realized, oh snap, there's something here. But Gary's one thing was being chairman of Keller Williams. Jay's one thing was writing books. They needed somebody whose one thing was the one thing. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was in medical device sales, and I had always known that I was destined for more. I wanted to wake up and own a business that made a big impact in the world and delivered real security for my family. But I had these golden handcuffs on. I had a good gig, you know, worked 35, 40 hours a week, made good money, had great work-life counterbalance. Things were great. But I was lacking that fulfillment. And it took two things happening in my life, Satori, that really forced me to make a change. And the first was a colleague of mine had a stroke. He was 35 at the time. And I remember my wife and I, we had just bought a house in Orange County and just had our first child. And my wife had made the decision to become a stay-at-home mom. And I remember looking at my colleague thinking, wow, if what happened to him happened to me, what happens to my family? And that was very unsettling. And then the next week, my company needed to make a change to our commission structure in order to remain competitive in the marketplace. And overnight, I lost 40% of my income.
Wow.
And when those two things happened back to back, where I'm already going, wow, I actually have to go to work to earn a living. And then the comp plan gets cut and I have zero control over it, is suddenly when the pain ratcheted up. And as months passed and we just started hemorrhaging cash and the bank account's almost hitting zero, is when I finally had enough pain in my life to force me to make a change. Because it's uncomfortable to go into the unknown. And I heard this Jim Rohn quote that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Looked at my five, thought, wow, these are amazing people. I always want them in my life. And the challenge was I was seeking guidance on how to build a business from people who weren't qualified to give it. I set out on a journey just to upgrade my five, and I met Jay Papazian because he spoke at our national sales meeting, and I approached him when he came off stage and we formed a relationship, and ultimately my one thing became turning the one thing into a training company.
Wow, that's very cool. And what was some of the, well, as you were building this thing, I mean, you know, you came into this, like, what was the like one mental shift that you would have to shift for yourself?
It's in my first 90 days, I had a state of the company meeting with my two partners, with Gary and Jay, and this was a defining moment in my life. I was being assessed on three things. There were three things that I had to be able to do exceptionally well. Otherwise I was fired. I had to be able to cast a vision for the company, because if Gary and Jay had to do the thinking for me, they didn't need me. I had to prove that I could drive revenue for the business. And the test was, could I generate $100,000 in 90 days or less out of thin air? And the third was, I had to prove that I could recruit and retain amazing talent. So that we start with number one, because they were ranked in order of priority. I had to prove that I could cast a vision. So I had to create a business plan and get Gary and Jay to sign off on it. Now, you have to, little context. I've never been a CEO of a company. I've been a sales guy. I sold copiers. Then I sold medical devices. And all of a sudden, I have to sit down with the chairman of the largest real estate company in the world and sell him on my vision to get him to sign off on it, which was very intimidating. And I walked into this room. I handed Gary and Jay each a copy of my one-page business plan. This is a framework that we teach. Mm-hmm. And it's simply one page, because it's tough to be on the same page with your organization if your plan literally doesn't fit on the same page. And on it were three things. The three major priorities that if we just accomplish those would make hitting our profit goals possible. We started talking about number one. Gary and Jay asked a bunch of questions about it. I answered them. I said, are we good? They go, yeah. And so I went on to number two, because that's what was next on the list, right? And pretty quickly, Gary started asking more questions about number one. I didn't think anything of it at the time. I just go, oh, he must have forgotten something. So I answered the questions. I said, are we good, Gary? He goes, yeah. And so I finish up number two, start talking about number three. Gary goes back to number one. And at this point, I realized something was off. It was like Ben Stiller in Meet the Parents, where he realizes he's not in the circle of trust. That's where I was. I answered the questions. I said, are we good? He goes, yeah. I start talking about number three, and Gary, within 10 seconds, stops me and goes, quick question. Do you need to accomplish number three in order to accomplish number two? I said, no. He said, do you need to accomplish number two in order to accomplish number one? I said, no. He said, then do me a favor, draw a line between number one and number two, or even better, rip the page in half. And then he said what was so profound, Satori. He said, don't even think about number two and number three until you've earned the right to by mastering number one. Here's why this was so profound is, in that moment, I realized my entire career, I had fallen trapped to the number one lie of productivity. Hmm. The lie that everything matters equally.
Yes.
For you who's listening to this, think about like how you go through your days. Are you really clear on the one thing you can do that would make everything else easier or unnecessary? And until your number one priority is done, do you view everything else as a distraction? The answer for most people is no. And that's where I was. And that's when the journey began.
Yeah. I love that. And obviously I've listened to the podcast, you know, for a while now. I mean, how long have you been out now? I mean, the One Thing podcast.
We launched the One Thing podcast January of 2017. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we've been going at it for a while now.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, okay, I've heard the different concepts. How would you describe the One Thing concept? I mean, people, you know, I hear it everywhere. People say, you know, you're one thing, you're one. But people don't really seem to understand what's the one thing really. Like, how sure. do you you know, describe the concept?
The one thing is the surprisingly simple truth behind extraordinary results. For you who's listening to this, have you ever had one of those days where you were so busy and you, at the end of the day, you looked up and you thought to yourself, I was so busy. Did I get anything done? Right? Mm. That's ordinary. That's what most people realize. The one thing is understanding that out of everything that's on your plate, in any given moment, there is one thing you can do, such that by doing it, everything else would be easier or unnecessary. It's like when you line up dominoes. Do you knock down each one individually?
Right.
No. You line them up. So all you have to do is knock down that lead one. And what happens, Satori?
They'll all go down.
They all go down. Mm-hmm. So this is about whether it's in your business, in your health, in your relationships, in your spirituality. How do we get clear on what we actually want, the goal? And based on that, how do we line up our priorities and our actions so that we're so clear on that lead dominant, we can just whack away at that one thing until it falls?
Right. Yeah, and I think about the different areas of life, right? Whether it's being a parent, right? Mm-hmm. We're both parents, right? Running a business, taking care of your health. and you think about all the different things that are spinning around at all times. So what does one do to focus on that one thing? Like, what does it really mean to focus on the one thing?
Yeah, sure. What does it mean to focus on the one thing? It starts first and foremost by seeking clarity. I think a lot of people, if even asking the question, like, what's the one thing I can do?
Yeah.
Such that by doing it, everything else would be easier and necessary. That's a big question. And big questions don't have the immediate answer. It's not like you ask and you're like, boom, I got it. They require that you search a little bit. Mm-hmm. So for starters, it actually means that you become the type of person who pushes past that wall of, I don't know, right? You seek and you find that answer. And once you do, you actually time block it. You mm-hmm. put it on your planner. You put it in your digital calendar so there is time reserved for you to accomplish that one thing. And when you show up to that time block, you protect it. And that's kind of the framework for the one thing. Identify your one thing, time block your one thing, protect your time block.
Right, right. I love that. I think that's so true. Just curious, it's interesting because sometimes, you know, to simplify it, let's look at, as a parent, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's your one thing as a parent? Like for you?
So for me, and this is me, this is not me projecting onto anyone else.
Right.
My one thing, the one thing I can do that makes being an extraordinary parent easier is actually being an extraordinary husband.
Hmm.
I've understood that, for at least in my belief, if I want to raise my children to be the best possible versions of themselves, I have to model what it looks like to be the best partner. Now,
so let me take that one step further then.
Then
so,
what's the one thing for that? Yeah.
Yes.
Because, and this is where people sometimes get stuck with the one thing is they find an answer like, oh, well, be an extraordinary husband. Like, oh, that's my one thing.
Yeah. Right.
It's the one thing you can do. Do, meaning action, activity,
right.
Such that by doing it would make being an extraordinary husband easier or unnecessary. And this is where we can break down a lot of things. There's a lot of things I can do to be an extraordinary husband, from being present with my wife, to dating my wife, to being on the same page about money, to understanding what each other's goals are. There's a lot of things, but really narrowing it down, because I've done this.
Mm-hmm.
My one thing to be an extraordinary husband is 36 date nights a year. I've gotten so clear, and if we look at my 411, which is a tool that you use to have absolute clarity on your priorities, if you look at number one under the personal section, it says 36 date nights this year, and I track it.
Nice.
Like, I can tell you I'm 7 behind year to date.
Well, first of all, I thanks for sharing that. But what's interesting with that, I think, that is that when people think about, you know, let's say those 36 date nights, right? And they go like, well, that seems kind of stiff or kind of, but it's kind of like you have the flexibility inside of those date nights to do whatever you want to do, right? So it's not like it takes away or robs your flexibility or creativity, right? It's just making sure that it actually happens.
Yeah. Well, and to give some more background there, I mean, when I looked at being a great husband, there were certain things in my life that were missing. My wife and I, we weren't feeling like we were going together. You know, we've got two young kids. I'm starting a company. It's a very stressful time. And our marriage reflected that. And so we weren't on the same page about money. We didn't have insight into each other's goals. We didn't really know how to communicate together in a way that we remained connected. Sometimes we would just get charged and emotionally things would escalate unnecessarily. There were all these things. And last year, I thought the one thing for our relationship was to every single Sunday have a family meeting to talk about our finances, because it was a major sticking point for us in our marriage. And after going through that for a year, I started to realize that being the money accountability man with my wife didn't actually make her love me more. Why is it that my wife didn't enjoy those conversations? And I told myself that until we got the money under tight lock, that then we earned the right to do date nights.
Mm.
But then I figured out, going through and failing for a year, that if my wife and I had date nights regularly, we would be connected. And if we were connected, we could have better conversations about money. And if we were aligned around money and the rest of our goals, we wouldn't have tension. And then we'd show up as better parents. And you start to see how the dominoes line up. And I chose 36 because I said, I don't need to do one every week, but I can do three a month.
Mm. Nice, nice. That's beautiful. And I think that when you talk about that, it's kind of even like that, right? So when you think about that date night, what's the one thing you do to show up presently, like to be present?
Yeah. So for me, it's come down to the cell phone and the technology. Oh. You know, am I like tonight is date night. Hmm. So if we were to look at my schedule, I know if I look at my planner or my digital calendar, if I see meetings leading right up to the point that I need to turn off business mode and get into husband mode, I know I'm already setting myself up for failure. Hmm. Do I have a transition time? Is there a time where I can just really decompress and process everything that happened in our business during the day and mentally prepare myself to walk into the household, the marriage? One of the things I do, Satori, is when I drive home and I park in our parking lot, I turn off the podcasts. I put my AirPods back in the case because for years I walked into the house listening to a podcast or talking to somebody on my phone, being greeted by my children. And then that was the transition, but there was no transition at all. Mm. I turn down the tech, I close my eyes and I meditate. And I start imagining what it's going to feel like to walk into the house, to embrace my wife, to hug and kiss my children, to mentally be there and nowhere else.
Right. Yeah, that's what I think is the distinction between a half-ass or a badass.
Mm, yeah. And here's the thing that I would say, because this is a huge misunderstanding about the one thing. People will read the book or listen to the podcast, or you know, they'll listen to everything you talk about here, Satori, and they'll be like, well, I want to be a badass. And they view what that means to be at a level of perfection.
Mm, good point. Yeah.
But perfection only gets into the way of what's possible. Mm. Every single one of us is going to fail on our path of mastery. And the question is not, are you perfect? The question is, are you doing better today than you did yesterday?
Mm. Yeah. What's your morning routine?
My morning routine.
How do you prepare your win? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So this is what it looks like. I wake up between 5:30 and 6 every day. I go and wake up my daughter so that she can start getting ready for school. Come downstairs. I make myself my breakfast. I make the kids breakfast. I'm with the kids and my wife until it's time to walk my daughter across, literally across the street. I'm staring at it right now too, so she can hop on the bus to go to school. Mm-hmm. And this is what's kind of cool. When she started taking the bus to school, I realized, oh, I have about an hour to an hour and a half till I have to be at the office. So then I get in the car and I go to the gym. I work out for anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour. I do a sauna, then I do shower and all that stuff, and then I head into the office.
Nice.
And meditation happens in the sauna.
Oh, nice. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so is that something that you, as your one thing, is that something that you keep consistent?
It is a true routine and habit at this point. And here's what's cool about this is if we looked at my one thing planner from last year, I tracked the number of days I was exercising. On average, going into at least halfway through the year or 8 months into the year, I was exercising on average about 4 days a month, which I was not happy with. I wasn't happy with my level of energy. I really wanted to transform my health, but really struggled to do it. But this is the cool part about lining up your dominoes. My daughter starting to go to kindergarten and just walking her across the street was a natural trigger. I know by 6:40 a.m. Daphne's getting on the bus. What if I just had my gym clothes ready to go and my lunch packed and I just got in the car and went to the gym? That's what it started with. Can I just get in the car and go to the gym? Not, let's be clear. If I drove to the gym and parked and then decided, you know what, I actually want donuts for breakfast and went and got a dozen donuts and crushed them, it was still a win. That never happened though, because I was in the parking lot. I went into the gym and sometimes I only worked out for 5 minutes, but it was so much more about becoming the type of person who went to the gym every day. And because I started going to the gym, I started working out longer. I started doing the sauna, which allowed me to meditate, which allowed me to take a cold shower, which all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, they have mouthwash here. I never use mouthwash. And all of a sudden I'm using mouthwash every day. And then I'm moisturizing my body. And like, now you're just looking at a much more beautiful Jeff.
That's awesome. So, you know, I assume that piece of that actually keeps you centered, keeps you focused.
Yeah.
How do you deal with stress? I mean, so many people that are overwhelmed, they're stressed out, they have a million plates spinning at all times. And I talk about this, you know, as part of our precision-based growth focus to go deep with things. But how do you deal with stress?
I've been very intentional about this one recently because I've also started to study, and the people that I surround myself with have been educating me on what stress actually does to the body. Mm-hmm. Anytime I'm feeling stressed, it starts by just being present and knowing it. Like, we all have this amazing thermometer in our bodies called our feelings. And anytime you're not feeling good, your body is saying something is off. And the first thing I do is I just go to breathe. Like, just deep breathing. Like, in any moment, you can pause, and even one breath can reset things. It really comes down to that. It's the breath for me.
Yeah.
There's some other things I do, but like that's the one thing.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, I'm the same way. Breath is like so key. And something that I learned years ago, which, I mean, I'm obviously training martial arts for many years, but this kind of breath that really helped me, it was kind of like, you know, the different systems we have in our body that either create stress or relaxation.
Yeah.
And so breathing in and out, like almost like when you meditate, closing your eyes and breathing in and out with the same inhalation as exhalation.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure and the tempo, I'm not geeking out on this stuff, but you know, like breathing in and out at the same tempo, same rhythm, in and out, is like it equilibrates your body and your mind and your nervous system.
Yeah.
It like just sinks it down.
So I was at a dad's retreat last week. It was a group of entrepreneurs who are focused on being family men with businesses, not businessmen with families.
Good distinction.
And they brought in a doc, his name's Sachin Patel, and he talked about stress and the effect that it has, how where the blood flows in your body is where things grow, or the rejuvenation, the rest. And when you're stressed, like, it literally shuts blood flow down in certain areas of your body. So you're not able to recover the way that you need to after these days. Mm. And he said, you know, it's shifting when you're stressed, you're in a sympathetic nervous system to a parasympathetic state. And the one thing you need to focus on, it's called the vagus nerve. And it's right like in your throat, which is why breathing is so good for it. He talked about gargling is actually really good. Chanting om, like that vibration actually stimulates the vagus nerve. And just doing that will take you from sympathetic to parasympathetic.
Mm. It's interesting, even when I make those sounds, I can feel the vibration, right? And it has a calming effect. Like it vibrates in your chest.
You know, the people listening to this are like going,
Right? Oh, okay. So, I mean, we could talk about so many different directions because it matters so much. I mean, to me, like, this is the most important thing to do, is to be able to take control of your focus, take control of your emotions, take control of your life, period. I know you talk about power habits.
Yeah.
What are your three power habits that you believe makes the biggest difference in keeping you productive and efficient in life?
Well, let me back it up a little further. There's a quote in The One Thing. It's my favorite quote. It's from F.M. Alexander. Mm. People do not decide their futures. They decide their habits. And their habits decide their futures. So that explains why you're asking this question, Satori.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, so many of us, we have these dreams, these goals, ambitions for our lives. And we rely on our discipline. We rely on our willpower. But both of those are lies. It's not about being a disciplined person. It's about leveraging your discipline to acquire habits. And your willpower is not always on will call. You know, it's just not always there for you. So how do we get really intentional about forming keystone habits that not only help us in that one area that we set out to intentionally, but it also has this halo effect where it starts to shine down and pay dividends in other areas of our life? And I can only share the habits that I have formed that have helped me. The habits that I have formed may not be the same habits that you need to form. And we can walk through a little exercise to help you identify what that first keystone habit is that you need to form. But for me, I remember when I first started the company, my partner Jay looked at me and said, "Jeff, the fastest way that you can get out of business with Gary and me is to not live the book." Yeah. And the book is ultimately about habits. Mm. So what will your first power habit be? And I looked at page 114 of the book, and it shows the seven circles. These are the seven most important areas of your life. And I'll share them with you. Mm-hmm. It's your spirituality, because every single one of us is going to wonder why we're here at some point. Right. It's our physical health, because if you don't have your body, where are you going to live? It's our personal life, the things we do for us personally to make us the best versions of ourselves. It's our key relationships. That's all the relationships you have. It's your job, meaning your specific role inside your organization, whether it's your company or you're an employee. It's your job. Then there's your business. If you're the owner, then your business is different. And if you're an employee, it's how, what's your one thing for the business overall? And your finances, spirituality, physical health, personal life, relationships, job, business, finances. Jay said, if you could only pick one area to form a habit in first, which would it be? And I listed off four areas that I really needed to form a habit in. And he said, Jeff, the book's called The One Thing, not The Four Things. And I said, I get that, Jay, but I really need to do these two. And he said, but if you could only choose one. And I said, I think I can do two. He said, Jeff, it's called The One Thing. And so I picked business to start. Hmm. I had just moved my family from Southern California to Austin. Like, the business had to work. Otherwise, it was for nothing. And the one thing that I could do that would make everything else in our business easier or unnecessary was for me to develop the habit of thinking in order of priority. Mm. You heard the story earlier about the GPS, the three priorities, and the number one, until your number one priority is done, everything else is a distraction. How could I become the type of person who, when I just looked at the world, I thought in order of priority? And the one thing I could do that would make thinking in order of priority easier or unnecessary was, could I check my 411, my priorities, before I check my email? Which, for those of you who are going, what's this 411 thing?
Yeah, yeah.
If you go to theonething.com, that's with the number one in the URL, and you click on the training tab, you'll see we've got a free training on what a 411 is. We also have what a 66-day challenge is. That's a challenge that you go on to form power habits. They're both there for free, and they'll give you a quick training on it. But my 411 reflected my true priorities. I just wanted to at least look at it and check it before I checked my email, which was everyone else's priorities. Mm. And I tracked it every day for 66 days. And you fast forward about 10 weeks, all of a sudden, I stopped feeling the need to check email all the time. Mm. All of a sudden, I was clear on what my one thing was. And I wanted to move the ball on it first. And all of a sudden, I started getting these amazing results in way less time, and my stress plummeted, because nice. I didn't see everything that needed to be done. I just saw a bunch of distractions, and I was just like, they don't matter. Let me get my one thing done.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, because I kind of developed for myself, you know, I hardly check my email anymore. Mm-hmm. People are like, well, you don't check your email? I'm like, no. I believe that if someone really wants to get in touch with me, and it's really
they'll find a way. They'll find
right?
a way.
Right. And the people that I really want to reach me, you know, they have my cell phone, right? If it's really important. So yeah, I really check my email.
No.
But yeah, that's so how did you identify your core, that place where you're like, okay, how do I sort out what that thing is? Like, the thing that's going to be most important.
Yeah.
How did you think around it?
Ask it differently.
Okay. So when you're talking about the 411, right?
Yeah.
Like, when you got to the point of understanding what it was, you first started thinking around how to identify them, first of all.
Yeah.
The areas, right?
And yep.
Your one thing. How did you get to go deeper to know which sure. one we the one to focus on?
Yeah. And this is something that we see people struggle with a lot before they start doing training, is either A, when they're picking their one thing, they're still thinking too big. There's this idea of, we have to think big and we have to go small, which is not what most people do. They think big and they act big. They think big, like, oh, I just need to build a great business. That's my one thing.
Right.
But that's still too big of an idea. Like, you have to go small to the point that it's a 2-inch domino that literally, with the flick of a finger, it's so easy to knock it over. And it's so powerful that it would knock over all the other dominoes. Right. So because I told that story, let's actually dissect it.
Okay.
I started with the seven circles. I looked at the seven areas and said, if I could only pick one, what would it be? And I forced myself to pick one with the loving help of my partner, Jay. And I picked business. I then asked the focusing question of the book. What's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else would be easier or unnecessary? Well, if my category is business, the one thing is to build a great business. And what's the one thing I can do to build a great business? I have to show up as the best possible leader I can show up as. Well, what's the one thing I can do to show up as the best possible leader? I have to be clear on what matters most. Well, what's the one thing I can do to be clear on what matters most? I have to know what matters most. What's the one thing I can do to know what matters most? I have to start being able to identify my priorities. Mm. What's the one thing I can do to identify my priorities? We already have a model and a system for that. That's what the 411 is. Can I check my 411 before I check my email? Now, let's be clear. It doesn't mean that I had to do anything else, but could I at least look at my priorities before I opened my inbox and even gave the outside world permission to penetrate my mind?
Right, right.
This idea of thinking big and going small, it's actually very simple. Just keep asking, what's the one thing I can do to make that happen? Right. Until you get to something that is so ridiculously simple that you go, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And then you trust the domino effect by knocking it down every single day, knowing that over time, the results aren't going to be there after day one. It's not like I'm a millennial, so I did it one day and then I wanted a trophy, right? I had to trust that over 66 days to really make it a habit that the results would eventually show up.
Yeah. And when you were going through that, was that challenging for you? Was that a struggle? I mean, you wanted that trophy, I know that, but you know, it's like when you're going through that, what was the obstacles that came up for you?
It's the trusting of the domino effect. Mm. Because it's just like the shape of success. It's that hockey stick growth. You know, you're doing the right activity and you're succeeding so slowly, it feels like you're failing. Mm. You're succeeding so slowly, it feels like you're failing. You're doing the right actions, but the results just aren't there yet. So it feels like you're failing. It's just like when you start working out for the first time in a long time, like it's painful. It sucks. It's not fun. You look in the mirror and you're like, I'm sorry. I'm not getting rid of my washer and dryer. My wife's not doing laundry on my washboard abs. Yet.
Right. Yeah. Right? And we want that instant gratification, right? We're so conditioned to it, like bingo. quick, right?
Bingo. So it's really just mentally preparing yourself to understand that the greatest results, extraordinary results, they come over time, not instantly.
Yeah. I love that you say that because, you know, I talk about this a lot, that people set these fantasy goals, right? These fantasy targets. But they're not really clear about what are those actual activities
mm-hmm.
required to achieve that target.
Mm-hmm. Right? And this is so the 411, I mean, we built an entire membership community around this where every month we do calls and help people dissect their 411s. And the mistake that we often see is they might be clear on their goals, the results they want, but tell me the last time you got out of a meeting and you thought to yourself, what result am I achieving right now? Say never.
Right.
We ask, what should I be doing right now? Mm-hmm. Actions are the language of our thoughts, not results.
Right.
Yet we write our goals in the form of results. And when you actually have to say, okay, well, what do I specifically have to do to achieve that? We quickly hit that wall of I don't know.
Right, right.
That's your opportunity to push and search and just keep asking, well, what's the one thing I could do that would make that easier or unnecessary? Well, what's the one thing I could do that would make that easier or unnecessary?
Right.
And you break it all the way down.
Yeah, I love that. And I know you talk about, I remember listening to the episode that you guys did on right around Christmas there, right? Like how people make this New Year's resolution, like 50% of Americans, right?
It's crazy.
And then what happened? Like the end of February?
Gone.
Right.
Gone.
But it is right, making this huge shift. So I've got a question for you. Because of all this stuff, right? Because we have all these things to maneuver. How do you practically focus on your one thing in the midst of the whirlwind of people trying to pull for your attention, trying to push it? Like I almost look at it as almost like you're trying to aim for a target, right? And somebody comes from the side and knocks you and like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, it starts by thinking big and going small. Hmm. For you who's listening to this, do you think it's a realistic expectation that if I told you half of your days, we would advise and encourage you to have blocked and protected for your most important work? Do you think it's a realistic expectation that immediately you set the bar for success that you have 4 hours time blocked and protected every single day, zero distractions, zero interruptions. Do you think that's realistic? No. Yet that's what we can aim for. Mm. And I can tell you, over 3 years of living this, my days look very much like that. And that's not where I started. It started by asking the question, can I time block and protect a 10-minute window every day? Can I, for 10 minutes, not check email? Can I, for 10 minutes, not even allow text messages or phone calls to come to my phone so I'm even aware of them? Can I, for 10 minutes, if somebody knocks on the door or asks, do you got a minute, I could say, I'm actually in the middle of something. Can you come back in 10 minutes? I could say yes. Maybe you can. And if you can't say yes to 10, can you do 5? Like, how do we make it that lead domino that you can do? Because when you do it every day for roughly 66 days, it becomes a habit. And do you think you just stop at 10 minutes? No, no, no. All of a sudden, it's 30 minutes. It's an hour. It's 2 hours. It's 4 hours. It's the path to getting everything that you want is to get one thing at a time. Mm. The cool thing about this domino effect is that when you line up your dominoes and you just knock down the lead one, it starts out like a really long train. It starts out too slow to even notice it's moving until it's moving so fast that it just cannot be stopped.
Yeah.
So out of everything that you are hearing in this episode, ask yourself the question, what's the one thing I can do?
Yeah.
So that's it by doing it. Everything else would be easier or unnecessary.
Let me give you a final question. I know you got to go here soon. So in what area do you half-ass things?
I'll tell you where I had been half-assing things and where I am now being intentional.
Okay.
I was half-assing my role as a husband and as a parent. We every year do a couples goal setting retreat. You came to it, right? Mm-hmm. And we do this exercise where we ask the question, what are the roles you play in your life? You know, so I wrote down husband, father, son, brother, cousin, nephew, business owner, value creator, employee, podcast host. Like, I wrote down all these roles that I played, and then we rank them in order of priority. What is the single role that matters most that makes everything else easier or unnecessary? And ultimately, I ranked them husband, father, value creator. And I kept ranking them, but we made you draw a line, meaning kind of like Gary did to me, that until your number one priority is done, everything else is a distraction. What's the line that no ifs, no ands, no buts, you must show up as these, as this version? I drew it after 3. So it was husband, father, value creator. That was 2 years ago that I identified that. And over that next period of time, every week when I sat down to do my 411 with my partner, Jay, because this is a model for having conversations with the people in your world, Jay from time to time would challenge me and say, are you really showing up as a value creator? Are you really showing up as a husband first, as a father second, as a value creator third? You know, are you being the type of person who helps other people get what they want first? And I wasn't. I mentioned earlier the idea of I was showing up as a businessman who had a family rather than a family man with a business. And that all changed this year. I got really intentional about it, to the point that I know and I track with my coach my date nights, my family 411s with my wife, coming into the house and actually not just allowing myself to, sometimes when you feel bored with, I got little kids and sometimes it's not highly stimulating, but to get on their level and to really put myself in their shoes and to play like a kid again. Like, we're setting vacations that are intentional about being present with the family, not just about good food and good cities.
Right. Which is really interesting when you say that, because, like, I think so many people that are listening to this right now, they're probably thinking, like, you know, I am I know this stuff, right? I know this is so important, and they're still not doing it. Like, what would make the, like you said, you have these identities for yourself already 2 years ago. What was the shift that made you actually realize the urgency or relevancy of it?
I'd say it was my wife's and my relationship. We just asked the question. We looked at where we were and we said, great, if we keep going in this direction, what does that look like over the next 5 years or 10 years? And we didn't like the answer. Hmm. We didn't like where it was going. And so you got two choices. You can close your eyes and cross your fingers and hope that things better, or you can actually put a plan in place and work the plan.
Yeah.
And so we started working it and get just one thing at a time over time led to a lot.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, we're still on our path of mastery there. Like, we're still going down that path.
Yeah.
And we're being intentional about it.
And that's the key thing. You stopped and you made that evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, Jeff, where can people learn more about you and the One Thing community?
Absolutely. So you can go to theonething.com. That's with the number one in the URL for the website. The book is The One Thing, all spelled out, the O-N-E thing. The podcast is The One Thing Podcast. And if you go to theonething.com, I would suggest clicking on the training page. You'll see we've got some great courses there that are the basic principles of the book in 15 minutes or less for free. And if you want to go deeper, we've got foundational trainings and events and corporate training and all that stuff. So it's there's good stuff there.
Cool. It's a great book, great community. Check it out. You'll love it. Awesome, Jeff. Thanks so much for sharing this time with us. And I really appreciate it. And I think that people are going to be able to have some really great insights and take some time, re-listen to this stuff again. And I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Satori.
Thanks. Boom. How'd you like that? If you want to grow and scale your business, you're probably studying a lot. And that's great. You're probably studying all the different strategies out there, right? That's also great. But the hardest part is figuring out how to remove overwhelm and friction and get done what matters without burning yourself out and without killing yourself in the process. Is that making sense? That's what I struggled with for a while until I learned the secrets of precision-based growth. So if you're wondering how precision-based growth can work in your business or life, I created a special opportunity for you to get on a call with me to get on a track with the right focus and, more important, how to maximize growth, maximize efficiency, and simplify. You're not alone. Want to talk? Spots are extremely limited, so if you're serious and you want me to personally answer your direct questions, you can apply for your spot by going to talktosatori.com. Again, that's talktosatori.com.